Test 1, 2, 3.
We'll just talk a little bit. Shy.
No, don't do that. I won't. I'll do is use it for minutes. But
okay.
So you. Let's see. This is May 2nd. I'm at Susan Elkin's place. And okay, we're looking at a sweater. And you've taken this from beginning to end. This is your sheep.
Right. Yeah.
And you're spinning.
Okay, and this particular sweater is that a friend of mine did the knitting. I find that with the sheep and the pottery, I don't do as much knitting as I used mm-hmm. to. The only time I really have time to knit is when I'm sitting in a craft show. Mm-hmm. So I work out deals. I either trade for yarn or trade for pottery, mm-hmm. How's it worked out. But this gray up here came from a young Coopworth ram, and this is my main ram, Harley, down here, this dark brown. And this kind of rose-colored is a combination of madder root and Brazil wood dyes. Mm-hmm. And that's all been carded together that gives you that variegation. Mm-hmm. I do occasionally use some of the chemical dyes just because they're convenient to use on some wool that I have for resale. But mostly I think my specialty is in natural dyes.
Uh-huh.
And this one, this is a combination of natural gray wool and marigold, and I believe this one is dahlia, which is one of my very favorites, more dahlia. You can see two different colors from the different mordants.
Uh-huh.
And I use five different mordants, and you can get a color range theoretically of five different colors from each natural dye.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's a natural color there, that's sandy. This particular fleece is the same as this sweater that I'm wearing, the fleece here, but this was a year before. And she got lighter as she got older. And she's pretty much stabled out now, but I've had her now for about 8 years, and it's been interesting to see her go from black to gray
uh-huh.
to silver. Now that one is what?
Chamomile?
Chamomile uh-huh. from Thea. I try and label my wool by the different sheep because it makes a difference. Sometimes
yeah.
the tint and also how they accept dye, because Thea here, she'll accept dye a little different than, this one, which I think is probably a border luster. Now, this is a mohair wool blend. This is mm-hmm. here. Now, this is a Coopworth, which is my breed specialty. And the Coopworth is known for a long staple and high luster.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see how much yeah. shinier that is than Thea. And I like using the Coopworth because it's got a very soft, silky handle. It's easy to spin, and no one else around here is breeding them, so uh-huh. it's sort of a fun thing. I started out with a lot of different kinds of sheep, and I made a decision about 5 years ago that the Coopworth is the direction I wanted to go. So I've got about, I'm keeping five, so I've got 16 purebred ewes, and right now a lot more rams than I need, 8 rams over a year. Which, you know, everybody wants to buy a ram. Yeah. I've got a lot of those.
Okay. And your place here is what? How big?
We have 40 acres.
40 acres, and how many sheep?
Right now, I think there's about 96. There may be more. I'm not really sure. I've got 53 lambs and, Lord, I'm not sure how many. But I think there's around mm-hmm. 96 on the property right now.
Okay, now the apprenticeship with Joanne, I know you'll be spinning. Are you beginning into dyeing? What all would you see happening?
Well, she's had a little bit of the dyeing, and to me it goes along naturally with it, so I'd like to see her do some more of that, especially in the summer, because that's the peak time to do it. But what I want her to do is explore some of the different materials, and wool is my favorite. It's the easiest one to do, and I think it's one that, because it's so common, is sometimes misused. That is, very fine wools, for example, this is a fine fiber. This is an angora in silk here that I have here. And people have a tendency to spin angora way too heavy. And it's not a good yarn because it doesn't hold together that well. It has more of a tendency to shed. And it's a very expensive fiber and it doesn't go that far. So I think it's important to compare a shorter stapled fiber like angora with wool. Or some of your shorter stapled wools like merino and lamb's wool with the longer stapled Lincoln and Romney and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
For the end product and for the handle. Now, all three of these wools are purebred Coopworth, but if you can feel, you'll feel that there is a difference in softness. This one is a coarser one, the dyed one, and it's not from the dyeing, it's the particular animal. She is a much coarser fleece. So I want to develop a sensitivity to the different qualities within wool and within different fibers like the angora and the silk and so forth, so that they are used properly. I've seen a lot of people, when they're starting out very enthusiastic, they will use a wool and they won't spin it, for example, a fine wool, they will spin it too bulky and it will have a tendency to pill. Or they will use a wrong kind of wool for a rug. And to me, that's important, is to be able to pick and choose and be sensitive enough to the different qualities of the fiber to pick out the best ways of spinning and the best end product. When I sell a fleece, it's important for me to know what they want to do with that fleece. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of time consuming, but I think it's time well spent. I also want to explore with her some of the different kinds of wheels. I've got, I think, 30. And everyone has a favorite wheel, but there are some wheels that work better for others. That wheel that you saw in the other room, it has a very different ratio for spinning than this particular contemporary wheel here. This one works very well for medium to bulky, and that one works very well for fine. It has to do with the relationship between the wheel and the whorls, and the amount of twist it puts in. And you can use some wheels for just about everything, but it's like trying to drive the Indianapolis 500 with a Volkswagen. You're much better off if you can have a speedster. So picking and choosing the right kind of equipment to me is also very important. Not that you have to have a whole lot of different kinds of equipment, but I think you need to realize the limitations of different wheels and pick and choose. Mm-hmm. There's the same thing happens in carding machines, happens in hand carders and various things. The skeiner over here is a yard and 6/10 around, and it's very handy for doing wool for me for doing selling. But I can't use that skeiner if I'm going to be entering a contest, because a contest is you need to have it exactly 2 yards around. The Nitty Knotty, which I have over here, is 2 yards around, but it isn't as accurate as a regular skeiner. And so again, picking and choosing the right kind of equipment. Mm-hmm. You don't always have to be a perfectionist, but I think the important thing is to be aware of the different kinds of things so that you choose instead of having things just accidental. Mm-hmm. And that to me is important. Mm-hmm. Because I am an impatient spinner, and I have decided that while contests and spinning very fine and very even are a lot of fun, they're a good challenge, the kind of yarn that I sell is a little more irregular. The stuff that I do for myself is not—it's not super perfect. I can do the super perfect, but I find that the more hand-spun look sells better. And as long as it has integrity for its intended purpose, I think it's to me the direction I like mm-hmm. to go. But everyone has their own feelings, and I think it's necessary to explore that and find out which direction you like to go.
Well, you may have answered some of these questions on the application form, but how long have you been spinning?
I learned in 71 or 72, and I started teaching in 73. I have a degree in art education, and I've been teaching a lot of children's classes, craft classes, and working a lot with Girl Scouts and so forth, and that's how I got into it. Mm-hmm. I very much enjoy spinning, even though pottery is my main income source. I find that it's very rewarding to teach spinning more than pottery, because people can pick it up, they can run with it, and you don't have to have nearly as much equipment as you do in teaching some of the other things like pottery. And I've been teaching either out here at this farm where we've been for 11 years or another farm where we had. And I always do a February class, and usually I do a couple other classes either in June or in the fall.
And out here?
Of the year.
I mean, you do them
here. Yeah, I do those here. I prefer to teach here because of all the equipment. It's when I go down, I've taught down at Cedar Lakes and Jackson's Mill, and then of course Augusta, and then up in Pennsylvania. I find that I never can remember all the equipment, and I can only get about a dozen spinning wheels in. Mm. And this way is that I've got everything handy, and the great wheels just don't travel. And I've got two of those out in the log cabin.
Was there some point when you sort of made a decision to devote a life to these crafts? make a big commitment to them, I mean, rather than just a hobby?
Well, I was in pre-vet, and I had always been interested in crafts, and when I didn't make it into veterinary medicine, my dad said, well, why don't you go into art? And I went into art, and I was in illustration, and I found that I had more energy. I needed to get up and move around. And my mother said, why don't you go into art therapy, because you're always into crafts, and that way you've got more of a physical release. And I said, oh, that's a good idea. And I just gravitated towards it when I was in the scouting, and I just really enjoyed teaching it to children because it was non-threatening. When you have to do a drawing or a painting a lot, well, I can't do that, I can't draw a straight line. But when they realize an awful lot of the same art principles are applied to a craft, suddenly it's fun, and they learn more. And I found that I enjoyed teaching, and I found that crafts were a good physical release for me, and I got to incorporate a lot of the art principles in it. So I guess since my interest in animals led me to growing the sheep, but there was something about spinning when I first took a class that I just fell in love with it. There was something addictive about it. Maybe there's a relationship between the movement of the spinning wheel and the movement of a potter's wheel and the tactile feel of wool versus the tactile feel of clay. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I really enjoyed it, and the growing the rabbits and the sheep just seemed to go along with it.
Have you ever done any much research into traditional spinners, or traditional folks who have always done this, learned through a family source or other than through a... Have you had contact with those sorts of people, and have you learned from them any?
I've learned bits and pieces from it, and sometimes it's in unexpected places. When I first started out, I got every book I could because I was very much interested in the antique wheels, and I found that a lot of the stuff was not written down because it was taken so much for granted, and it's only been with the last few years that they have gotten really concrete on when spinning came in, and they've had to go to other pictures and so forth. But I did a demonstration down at Jackson's Mill for some senior citizens, and I was very much impressed, this is about 12 years ago, that there were so many older people that had helped their mother wash the wool, card the wool, but they had never learned to spin. And I figured it out that the mother or the grandmother loved to spin, and if she taught her children how, that meant she lost someone who was going to do the carding for her, because it takes a lot more time to card the wool than it does to spin. Mm-hmm. And I would hand the cards over to some of the old women, and they could be very sharp on being able to card, and I'd ask them if they wanted to sit down and spin, but most of them said no, that they hadn't. There was another woman here in town who had learned, and I talked and picked up some things from her, but I found too is that a lot of times what they had was out of necessity. That is, they made thread, they made socks, and that was it. And there were so many other things in the day that they really didn't have a chance to do a whole lot more exploring except in a narrow field. And that's not coming down on them, but it was restricted, and I was again rather surprised at that. But I guess if you think about it, if you only had one kind of sheep and you only had one kind of spinning wheel, that was it. But I've tried to learn as much as I can, and the advantage of going around demonstrating is that occasionally you will run into these people. I have found demonstrating is that a lot of the men are more interested and have a lot more interest in remembering what their grandmother did, mm-hmm. sometimes than some of the women did do.
I had an old fellow tell me that his mother went to town once a week on horseback, and she'd knit a pair of socks coming and going.
And going?
On horseback, there's, I guess, the horse knew the way, no doubt.
Yeah, that's incredible. I found out that they really like to use the colored wool for socks because it didn't show the dirt. And I would run into an occasional old man that would say, you know, can you knit me a pair of socks out of colored wool? And I say, well, I can do mittens, but I don't do socks. But I will, you know, if you can find someone that will do you the socks, I'll make you the yarn. That kind of thing. But more and more of that is falling by the wayside.
Yeah. Well, that's the way I've felt about spinning. I'm into music, and I can still find lots of musicians and singers.
Mm-hmm.
But if you ask me to name a spinner who is spinning from, it's one of those things that, you know, I don't.
First, she was in charge of the museum, and she used to say she had no talent other than running her mouth, and she was an old school teacher. And she was very informative on telling me this and that and the next thing with the equipment, and I had attended the Stallstown Scutcheon Festival, and I would sit there for hours and watch and quiz and talk to those people. And then I went down to the Springs Museum and started demonstrating down there. And we would communicate. I was found out they almost had the same thing. A lot of their old spinners had died. And fortunately, a lot of the people that were doing it had remembered. So I would compare how my redding was going with their redding. And we would, you know, well, how was your year going? Well, this. And it was very informative that way in that area. But again, at that museum, which is a two-day festival, it's incredible the number of older people that would come through and say, that belonged to my grandfather. Do you spin? No. Can you remember anything? Not particularly. And it was very upsetting. But I've met a lot of the people that had the equipment and remember. But they can't remember as much as you would hope that they could in the spinning field. Mm-hmm. That to me is a frustrating thing.
I guess
thing
the industrialization of it came really early when you're talking about textiles.
Yeah.
It was one of the first things to really get revolutionized.
Well, even just the carding machine. Out over in Preston County, there's a road that says Wool Mill Road. And I have a feeling that there was probably a wool mill there. And there's a big pile of carded, very narrow pencil roving up at the Springs Museum. It's been there since the turn of the century. And there had been a mill in the area. So when they had an opportunity to take their wool to a mill to have it carded and then bring back and spin, they would do it.
Right.
The mill that there's a mill up at Avella, PA that's out of New Hampshire, and it's a very old carding machine that they have renovated, and this wool has been carded on it. Mm-hmm. Is it to save time anymore? Is that I will take it up there? Mm-hmm. I still do hand carding for a lot of the very delicate things, but if I'm into production stuff, is that I send the stuff up there, and it's an old antique mill.
Mm-hmm.
Now, most of the mills now aren't, but they are fortunate that they managed to get one and have someone that could put it in working condition.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there are enough things around for Joanne. I would very much like to have her go to the Springs Museum and demonstrate on the old equipment. I think that's an excellent opportunity there.
Mm-hmm.
There are some other festivals. They're trying to get a carding machine going down at Mingo, and there's a festival the 15th of May down there. And it's at things like that where you can meet people.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes if you're just demonstrating at malls, you don't. But some of these older, smaller festivals, you can.
Mm-hmm.
There had been a spinning wheel maker down at Elkins. Colton? Is that the name of the town near Elkins?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't know if he is still alive or not. I think that must have been about 15 years ago that I was down there, and I met and talked to him, and he had an old spinning wheel that his grandmother had, and he was making copies of it. And he had the whorls the same size, and I tried to talk to him about it. And he insisted that's how he was going to make it, and I said, but originally this was just a little different.
Uh-huh.
No. But I said, this won't work. That's the way it is. And I said, it was difficult to convince him of how the wheel originally had looked, but he was bound determined to continue with it. But even then, you could learn his approach, and he did have his grandmother's wheel.
Yeah.
So there are times when you think you've come across something like this, and it gets to be frustrating. Mm-hmm.
And do you do anything with flax? Did I hear something?
Yes. I grow flax. Last year I didn't because of the drought. I was waiting for the conditions to get right to plant it. And it was dry, and I'm just as glad I didn't because I saved my seed from year to year. It's a different kind of flax seed.
Now, what about it? Something just flashed in my mind. I had an old person tell me, when you have something in your eye,
Put
flax seed in?
Yes,
yeah.
you take a flax seed, and it's slightly oily, and for some reason it seems to be able to catch the lint or whatever and pull it to the side of the eye.
Uh-huh. Huh.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yep,
that's
you're right. Yeah. There, you probably go to the general health store and get flax seed anymore, but it's a lot neater if you have your own.
Yeah.
And then I grow a lot of the flowers. The dahlias I grow specifically for dyeing, and the marigolds and the zinnias, and I've got some coreopsis, but I really like cosmos. They're very similar to the color you can get with it.
Uh-huh.
I've tried indigo, couldn't get that to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, to me, fall is just fun time to collect, and I really enjoy collecting and drawing. So, and amazing, within a mile of here, so I can get almost all of my dye stuff. And my husband has about shot me because there's a patch of thistles that I have kept going for years, and of course this is that they've spread, and he keeps cutting them out, and I try and hang on to those and some of the burdock because I know where it is when I need it for a dye plant.